Hello and welcome to SMPD, the podcast where we look back at the cartoons that shaped our childhood. I am Chris Bolton. With me, as always, my cartoon companion, Mr. Mark Williams.
Hello.
And this episode, we are looking back at Batman Beyond, or Batman of the Future, as I first come to know it.
Right, I'm glad you said that.
Okay.
I'm very glad you said, because
Elaborate.
I remember this being on, it was on, I want to say it was on Channel 4, round about 99, 2000-ish.
Definitely 99, 2000-ish. For the life of me, I cannot remember what channel it was on. I was trying to remember this earlier.
I'm sure it was Channel 4. And then it would have popped up later on. I'd have seen it on like Cartoon Network or somewhere as well at some point. But I remember there being a Batman of the Future cartoon.
Yep.
And then I remember there being Batman Beyond, and they look very fucking similar.
They are one and the same.
I've never gone back and checked to see which one they are. So I'm glad you've said that. First, straight out of the bat.
They are one and the same. I've got quite a complicated history with this show. I've watched it in its entirety now, probably about three times. Not including this time. I haven't got all the way through this time. I've watched all of season one. I haven't watched any of season two or three. We'll come into that as we talk about the show. But yeah, originally I bounced off this really fucking hard. I came back around to this about probably 6 or 7 years after it first aired, around about 2010-ish, I think, probably I first started watching this. So yeah, when it first aired, it was definitely around about 1999, 2000, because I was in my late teens. I remember that much. And I also remember specifically the title Batman of the Future and just being like, what the like, what is that? Really? Yeah. What a fucking god-awful title. It was a territory thing. I don't know why we couldn't use Batman Beyond. Maybe Beyond doesn't translate that well. I don't know. But it was for European territories anyway. It was Batman of the Future. And I remember all the merch being Batman of the Future. I hated the design of the Batsuit. Still do. We'll talk about that later as well. So the two things together, I was like, oh man, what the fuck is this shit? And then I watched a couple of episodes and I just bounced off it so hard because it felt to me like, it felt like they just should have made a Nightwing show. As a Batman fan and as a DC Comics fan, what, you know, watching it originally, I was just like, what the fuck is, why don't, if you want Nightwing, just make Nightwing.
Well, yeah, the material's there.
Yeah, so just do it. But of course, they need to use Batman in the title so that people watch it. And it was first through the door of the kind of slew of what will become the DC animated universe, you know, all those straight to video specials and everything. It all started here. I mean, you could argue you could trace that back to Batman the Animated Series, but that kind of lives in its own little bubble. You know, everything that would follow Justice League and Young Justice and the New Adventures of Superman and all of those.
Wasn't there a Batman between these two as well? It's like the New Batman Adventures or something.
Yes, it was kind of the last season of Batman the Animated Series. They changed the title, but it was, for all intents and purposes, the final season of Batman the Animated Series.
Right. Okay.
So there was that, and they would, you know, there would be Batman shows after this as well. You know, we'd go on to things like Brave and the Bold and everything. But this was the kind of the first one through the door, off the back of Batman the Animated Series. So it had a lot to live up to as well.
Yes, it did.
But for me initially, I really was just like, what the fuck? Batman of the Future, and he's got this fucking dopey-ass looking suit that just looks like a very poor Miles Morales Spider-Man suit rip-off. And it, like, he's a wisecracking teenager, and like, no, just fuck
That's
all of this
Batman.
Shit. Yeah, just fuck it all. Fuck all that shit. So then I went away.
The thing with that, as I said, and even if they didn't want, even if they said, okay, it's not going to get as much traction if we make it a Nightwing show, because not as many people who are casual fans of Batman are going to know
what that
is.
Yeah.
So that's why they could have quite easily made an entirely new superhero if they were going to do that.
Yeah. Totally.
To much the same effect. You know, you still have the cantankerous former occupant of the suit. Doesn't have to be Bruce Wayne. Doesn't have to be Batman. And then you take away a lot of that baggage that comes with it that viewers will have had. Like yourself will have rubbed up against it because thinking, what the fuck is this? This isn't Batman. This is some fucking weird, stupid thing where they're just using the properties. And I can see how that would have rubbed up very early on. I mean, I came to it slightly differently because I remember I saw bits of the animated series as it was on, and then I saw more of it as I got older. So then when this came out, I think I just finished watching a large chunk of the animated series. Mm. So it kind of followed. And I was like, oh, that's the same voice. That's still Batman's voice. And then there was bits of the suit design was the same. You know, in the cabinet, in the glass cabinet, you had the suit from the animated series. Stuff like that. So things like that translated, and then you had... The design on the Rogues Gallery, you had the ventriloquist, I can't remember the fucking dummy's name, that's in there, and you see like the Joker playing cards and stuff like that. So there's lots of tie-ins there, and I was like, okay, right, I can kind of get on board with this. And then as it went through, I'd forgotten most of the fucking stories, I've got to be honest, by the time I rewatched it this week. But at the time, you know, it sort of going straight from one into the next, you can sort of see where they went with it. And I didn't mind that so much. But then, yeah, I largely forgot about it for about 20 years.
Yeah, so I came around to that by the time I'd watched it for the second time, and I'd kind of calmed down a little bit and just given it a bit of a chance. But, yeah, originally, as like I was about 18 or 19, I think, when this came out. Maybe slightly older, but certainly... I was certainly 21 at the oldest, let's say, then. I was late teens. Big comic book nerd, you know, at the time. And just I was just like, what the fuck is this? I don't need this. Who is this for? Like all sorts of things, and I'll touch on all of them as we talk about this, no doubt. Ultimately, like, not to bury the lead, I love this show, right? In subsequent rewatches, I came to appreciate it greatly. I love the show, and I said to you when we were doing it, you know, it's like this was a pay-to-play, you know, we always prefer to pay for our stuff when we can. Anyway, sometimes it's not available. This was, you know, it's readily available. So I said to Mark, like, look, this is worth, it's like £8 or something, I think.
There's £8 a suit. I paid 25 quid for the whole run,
and it's worth every penny of that. I remember they say, like, it's absolutely worth it. Okay, so I'm not, this isn't gonna be one of those shows where I'm just dumping on it, okay? But I will talk about some of the things I dislike, because there are some things I dislike.
There's always going to be bits of that. I think there are bits I didn't quite like either, but we'll look at those when we go through.
But yeah, as a kind of young comic book fan, I'm looking at it thinking, like, cause I want the Nightwing show. I love Nightwing as a character as well. So it's just like, just give me Dick. Like, just all I want is Dick, basically. Mark is trying so hard not to laugh right now. I'm very aware of what I was doing there. So I'm like, what the fuck is this Terry McGinnis shit? So anyway, I let Sleeping Dogs Lie. It ran its course. I circled back around to it round about 2010, at a time when I'd finished university and stuff, and I had a bit more time. And I got back in by watching Return of the Joker, because there was an animated feature, Return of the Joker, which is very, very good. Absolutely batshit crazy.
Yes.
But very, very good. And
that's the one with the twins, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Without giving away anything else of it.
Yeah. With Return of the Joker, you know, there's this whole... I mean, we can spoil bits of it, I think, but there's this whole thing about Joker, like, uploading his consciousness to a microchip, and then it gets implanted. And I won't spoil too much, but it gets implanted in a member of the Bat family, and then so the Joker subsequently comes back. Absolute fucking madness.
Yeah.
But kind of in order to go along with the ride, it really needs you to buy into the Batman Beyond universe, because if you don't, you're just like, this is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it means nothing.
Yeah, this is absolutely ridiculous. So,
it's quite fun, actually. Just thinking about it before you move on, the parallels between that particular story and the Return of the Joker movie that came out, and what they did with Arkham Knight, the game, and the way they pulled that together. There were lots of parallels in that as well.
I was very much reminded of Return of the Joker all the way through Arkham Knight. And I think, is it Arkham Knight where you can actually get the bat suit from Batman Beyond? It's one of the Arkham games. You can definitely unlock it.
Yeah.
But it's it's essentially that. Just yeah,
it's that because, story.
Yeah, just because it's the people. Future. There's technology and stuff like that. And so I watched that, and I actually really enjoyed it. And I was like, okay, I'll give it another stab. So I went in with fresh eyes, and second time out, just without all that baggage of being just a stupid 19-year-old kid who just really wanted a Nightwing series, I was just like, no, this is quite good, actually. I just binged through the whole thing. Like I say, I've watched it a few times since as well. And I just came to appreciate it for what it is, which is, I sort of view this, it's definitely, you're right, Mark, it's definitely set in continuity of Batman the Animated Series, I think. I don't know if that's ever actually been canonized, but the suits are there, and it's Kevin Conroy.
I did read something earlier on, I can't remember, I think I've moved on from the window now, but I think it's considered to be a continuation. I think it's considered to be the sort of the end part of it. So you'd have Batman the Animated Series, then the new Batman Adventures, or however they repackaged the end of that, and then Batman Beyond. I think that's kind of an arc for Kevin Conroy's Batman. I think that's what it was supposed to be. And obviously you have all the other stuff that kind of spun off.
And it feels very much like that. But it's, you have to come at it from the title of, like, it's from the standpoint, sorry, of its Batman in title alone. Completely. It's its own thing. Because otherwise, you know, I was only, well, not even half joking. I wasn't really joking when I sarcastically said to you in a message earlier, I think it's the best Spider-Man show that's ever been made. Yeah. Because that's really what it feels like is Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's who Terry's character is. He's Peter Parker.
He's Peter Parker, right? He's a wisecracking teen in a super-powered suit, basically. So, you have to make peace with that. And I was able to do that as I got older. And when you do that, the storytelling here is excellent, particularly the first season. It goes off the boil in seasons 2 and 3. It takes a very marked step backwards in terms of its maturity, I think, in seasons 2 and 3.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's bad. It's just a totally different kind of vibe. Because
yeah, I was going to say, a different feeling. The first season, aside from the whole blight aspect, and I know with Batman, you always had your sort of, your monstrous villains. They weren't all people. No, there was an element of enhancement or superpower, or whatever you want to call it. So, yours kind of had that, but it didn't feel too heavy on those. But once you went into seasons 2 and 3, it's like they played more on the monster of the week.
Yeah, it's very
at the expense of the storytelling, and I think that was the thing that told for me, because I bought it might have been yesterday, and I watched. I was picking through. There's a really good recap which I sent to you. There's a really good recap of the entire 3 seasons on YouTube. It's like 40 minutes long, and it picks out the sort of the key recurring bits, so the bits with the Royal Flush Gang and the bits with Ink and stuff. So it picks out all of those, and it shows you where those storylines go throughout the run of the 3 seasons. And that was a really good way back in for me, because I remember this from the time. I remember watching it, remember liking it. Haven't thought about or watched this since. Would have been 2004, 2005. I'm sure it was on Cartoon Network or something like that. And I was in my last year of uni, and it was on randomly one day, and I picked it up again. So we're talking 20 years since I've looked at this show. So it was a really good way of getting me back into it. And then we were chatting yesterday. I was like, was it whatever day it was? And I'm talking about whether it was worth picking up. And I was looking for it. I thought, right, okay, actually, yeah, it's 24, 25 quid for the whole run. And I will probably watch this more than once. And now, having watched all of season 1, half of season 2, and a handful of episodes from season 3 picked out of that recap, I can guarantee I will watch all of this again at least twice.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely that good. But it reminds me, in its kind of tonal shift, I'm always reminded of Gargoyles, in that, you know, that first season of Gargoyles was exceptional. Like, really, really exceptional in its maturity. And I don't mean maturity in terms of content, but just in its storytelling and its approach to its material.
Yeah.
And this is the same. Like, that first season pulls no punches. It doesn't dumb anything down. It's not aimed at kids. Like, it's for kids, but it's not aimed at kids. It's really fucking violent. Ridiculously
Yeah, that was one of the criticisms, violent. Actually, was that it was marketed and it was presented as a kids' show, but actually, it is really violent. There are some episodes where, I think it might be in the first episode of season 2, where actually you get blood splatter. Somebody gets shot and you get blood splatter as they fall over.
Yeah.
I was like, you don't get that in kids' shows.
No.
You might get a patch of red once they're on the ground, but that's it. You don't get anything more than that. I mean, this it was something I did pick up through throughout the watch, actually. And there's this, you know, the whole thing about Batman doesn't kill, and the bit at the very beginning of the first episode where he pulls a gun on somebody because he's having a heart attack and he's scared, and the whole that whole bit is like, oh fuck, right, yeah, Batman doesn't kill.
Yeah.
So that's why that bit in itself, everybody knows Batman doesn't kill. So the fact he pulls a gun on you is fucking terrifying. So this whole thing of Batman doesn't kill, Terry fucking does.
Yep.
He might not shoot anybody, he fucking kills every bastard.
Yeah. I mean, he's a totally different character. That's the thing. He's a rage-filled teenager. You know.
But I think that's angry. Kind of what I think that's what people railed against was the Batman. No, Batman does beat people up. And whenever we've seen Batman on TV at this point, we've had Adam West, we've had the animated series. We don't count the films and that, because the films weren't marketed as kids' films, and they were actually given. I think Batman was 15. I think Batman Returns was 12. So they were given older ratings.
If I remember rightly, Batman Returns.
Quite possibly, yeah.
I'm almost certain it was.
I think you might be right on that.
12 rated movie in the UK.
Yeah, I remember Spider-Man being the first 12A, but I'm not sure. I think you're right on that one. But yeah, so they were aimed at an older audience, whereas people come into this from Adam West and seeing Batman on TV, then having seen the animated series, where it's all stylized, it's all Tommy guns, all the rest of it, but Batman doesn't kill people. He fights them in a way that, yes, he beats them, but it's not that graphic, it's not that gory. This motherfucker is dropping people. No, he's dropping people off buildings. He's unleashing steel coils so they crush people. Completely fucking different. And that's the whole point of the character. Again, he's a different Batman. But that's not what people were expecting. I think that's what a lot of people rallied against right at the beginning, was that I can't let my 5-year-old watch that. Batman, a vigilante whose parents were murdered, is killing people.
Yeah.
Go figure.
I totally understand the need for the tonal shift in seasons 2 and 3. I have no doubt that was a network thing.
That's a focus group thing.
They've come back and gone, whoa, hold on, guys.
Yeah.
What are you doing here? But it is, as an adult viewer, it is a shame, because the first season
is excellent.
It's absolutely, like, it's up there with Gargoyles. It's phenomenal in its storytelling, I think it's beautiful to look at. I hate that bat suit, but everything else about it I absolutely love.
It's so stylized. It's brilliant.
The really square angles, especially on Bruce. Like, I think the way they draw Bruce, where he's just this fucking mountain of, like, a... They never say his age, but I always got the impression he was, like, late 70s, early 80s. Like, he's proper.
He's a proper old man. And the way they draw him, he's slightly hunched over, so he hasn't got a neck. He just comes down from the head and goes out of the shoulders. And he's really broad shoulders. And he's just a block, isn't he?
He kind of looks like, you know, when wrestlers retire and they stop juicing. And just all of that muscle just turns to fat. He's
just on that. Have you seen Batista this week?
Oh, don't. You mean...
Fuck me. Yeah. What happened there?
I
Somebody
know.
Somebody deflated him.
Yeah. It's fucking frightening, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean...
There's only, what, 2-3 years since he was fucking massive.
Yeah. I mean, not to cast aspersions or anything, but it looks like somebody stopped the juice, right?
Supply ran out.
Yeah. So, but that's kind of what it looks like, is that he's stopped working out. And he's just
there's a relaxed muscle, and it's just like solid,
and it's just power. That's all just power. Like, the muscle hasn't gone away; it's just relaxed. He looks like if you fucking ran into him, you would just bounce off him.
A good example was George Foreman, actually, when he was plugging the grills when they first came out. You looked at him, you're thinking he's not fat, but he's not well built anymore. He's just solid, and it kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, definitely. As opposed to sort of the way he's drawn in something like Dark Knight Returns, where actually he is quite flabby and out of shape. And it's an ugly book. And it's an ugly book because it's an ugly story, Dark Knight Returns. So that all makes sense for its style, but that wouldn't fit here. And actually, I guess this is the place to talk about that, because we talk about, just to take a slight detour. Whilst that is, at least the original Dark Knight Returns is one of my favorite Batman stories of all time. I think it's a lot of people's favorite story. This version of Old Man Bruce, this specific one from Batman Beyond, is the absolute just chef's kiss. Like, this is exactly how Batman would age in my mind. You know, the Dark Knight Returns is a very extreme take on the character. That's kind of the point, right? He's gone extreme right-wing fascist. Like, it's the worst possible version of what this character could become. Like, this real twisted, violent old man with a lot of pent-up aggression and regret. And you sort of get in that first episode as well. Like you can almost see the sliding doors moment of like he's going that way.
Yeah, definitely.
But Terry shows up and he's just like, okay, no, I'll take the kid under my wing. And it kind of saves Bruce as much as he's saving Terry. And the relationship between them is really, really just so well played out.
Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting with Barbara as well, the way they portrayed her and the whole the way that their relationship had sort of not deteriorated, but it just sort of it run its course over the years. And she had to move on, she had to get a life. She could do that, whereas Bruce can't because he's got nothing to move on to. So Bruce is still hanging on. So then the fact that he's still going off and saving the damsel in distress, even though he's in his fucking 50s and has a heart attack while he's doing it, that's still who he is. Whereas Barbara's have pulled away from that, going, actually, I can do just as much good doing what my dad did. I can go and be the police commissioner. I can go and be the law, as opposed to being on the run from the law. But actually, I can do just as much good in a world where there isn't a Batman, because Batman's now old and fucking retired because he can't do it. And the whole thing where he's in the first episode, never again. Because he realizes, not the fact that there's two parts to it, the fact that he almost didn't save the girl because he was too fucking old and his body let him down, but also he almost gave up what he was when he pulled that gun.
Mm. Yeah.
And I said that, for me, that's that moment. If he's got that gun, if he pulls that trigger, he goes off to Dark Knight Returns.
Exactly.
By not pulling that trigger, that was the moment for me.
Yeah, and again, it's that feeling of like, it is that, it feels like that's the natural continuation of the Kevin Conroy Batman, right? Of the Batman, the animated series Batman. It feels like that character. And that whole opening sequence is just incredible. Like, and the thing with pulling the gun, like there's no dialogue spoken there. He just pulls the gun. And this is animation we're talking about as well. He pulls the gun. And you just see the look on his face, and it's just like, and as you say,
he's in fucking anguish.
Yeah.
He's terrified.
And he's scared of himself because he knows.
He's not scared of the thugs beating him up. He's scared of the fact he's pulled a gun.
Yeah, and he almost pulled that trigger. Like, he had to stop himself. I think that's fascinating for the character. I think that gives us such solid groundwork to build these stories off. And then, you're right, there's the relationship with Barbara as well, where it's interesting. It's one I dug into quite a lot when I was watching it the second time. There's quite a lot you can pull out of that, the relationship with Bruce and Barbara, because they are still in contact. You know, when Terry first starts taking to the streets, he's trying to set him up to speak to Barbara and kind of get them to have the same relationship that he had with his father. But there's this kind of, at first, it kind of feels like it's almost an abusive parent relationship where she's just like, sort of cut herself off from him, and she doesn't.
Yeah.
But then the more you dig into it, it starts to feel more, to me anyway, it's almost like she's escaped a cult. It's like the Bat family is this cult, and you know, Bruce is the cult leader, where it's like he's right and the rest of the world is wrong, and all of the problems are to do with everyone else, and he is the solution. And that absolutely tracks with the character, and I think there's something fascinating in that as well. You know, when you've got characters like Terry and Dick and all of those, you can see how they easily buy into that cult because they come from the same background as Bruce, right? They've got the dead parents, essentially. Whereas
they've got the loss, they've got the grief, they've got the anger.
Yeah, whereas with Barbara, it's more from this just wanting to do right, and rallying back against her dad and stuff. So then to take a step back from that and go, oh no, actually, he's a fucking psychopath. And I think they play that out very well with her. Again, it's never spoken, really. She doesn't turn to camera at any point and go, yeah, but you're a fucking psycho.
No, but it's definitely really interesting scene. It reminded me of the Pacino De Niro scene in Heat, where they're in the diner. Mm. And there's a scene where she takes Terry off to tell him, basically tell him their story. And she's like, no, it felt like the most natural thing in the world that, no, it was us against the street. And then I grew up, but for him, he could never step away from the fact that there were other things than the street. It wasn't, that's not all there was to life. And without her turning to camera going, he's a fucking nutter. You want to stay well clear of him. She just said, look, no, it's very much a case of, look, this is the path I was on. And if you carry on, you're going to go the same way.
Yeah.
But without hammering over the head with it, and without hammering the viewer over the head with it as well, because it's so easy to do that. And I think that's testament to Paul Dini and Bruce Timm, in the way that, you know, the way that character has been put together, that you don't get that, but you just get her whole thing of, you know, she's always trying to, she's not always telling, look, stand down, just do yourself a favor, just fucking leave it alone, because she's been there, she's done that, and she still wears those scars with her.
Yeah,
and it's almost as it comes across again. It comes across as a bit sort of bitter and jilted ex, or whatever, however you want to look at it. Now she's kind of bitter that, you know, there's a new one there, and she's trying to stop it because she doesn't like it. But actually, she's going, no, it's very much a case of, look, I've done this. I've been where you are, and you're going to be as fucked up as I am if you carry on. And it's almost like she's putting an arm around him without putting an arm around him. And
yes.
Just trying to steer him.
Yeah, and it does feel like that kind of, like I said, it's almost this kind of cult survivor relationship where she's just like, I'm out of this. Don't get yourself into it.
So, and it's that sort of thing as well. Like, you can't tell somebody. They've got to see it for themselves.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the relationship she sort of, certainly in that first series, she kind of develops with him, where she's sort of steering and saying, look, just keep an eye out for this. Just watch that.
Yeah.
Rather than, look, he's evil, or he's bad, or he's mental, he's going to get you killed. It's just be a bit careful, be a bit mindful.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Just trying to open his eyes a little bit. And I really like that. I think the relationships between Terry and Bruce were, I think, was spot on. The relationship with Barbara was very good. Wasn't enough of it, I feel. They could have made more of that. The relationship with Max in the second series, I thought, was very good.
Yeah.
Dana could go fuck on and jump off a bridge for all I care. She was just annoying.
Yeah.
She was... I get why she was there, but she was just annoying. So I think that the better relationships were the ones with the established characters who they had more time to flesh out, with the exception of Max, who was new. But they had a bit more... because they didn't have to build those characters, they were just building on what was already there. They could concentrate on Terry and how Terry's interacting with them, rather than going on, these are two people who we've never met before.
Yeah.
So now we need to bring both sets of baggage, and we need to bring everybody's history and everybody's life into it. But we have to tell people what that is first. And by avoiding having to do that, by having the established the characters with Bruce and Barbara, they can focus on Terry and how Terry is, because Terry's our cipher into this whole thing anyway. So
we
can join the same world at the same time by his interactions, by him meeting them for the first time, him experiencing those things for the first time that they've already experienced, and how they're relating them to them. And I think that was really well handled.
Yeah, it was. As you say, you've got all of that baggage already. So and they don't even attempt to retread that ground. You know, there is an assumption that everyone knows who Batman is. And that, I think that's fair. You know, we don't need the whole origin again. You either spent time with these characters, in which case you've got all that baggage, or you didn't, in which case you don't need it, because this story is actually about Terry and Bruce, and that's fine, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, the writing, those characters are there as a bedrock, and the writing team just build on that. Even when you come to the Monster of the Week stuff in season 2 and 3, they've got such a strong foundation to build on with these stories, that it's really hard to put a foot wrong. Now, it helps. You've already mentioned Paul Dini. It helps that you've got Paul Dini and Alan Bennett here just at the top of their game. Like I said, ready to launch into what would become an entire universe of shows. Incidentally, before anybody writes in and tries to correct us, because we're dealing with Batman fans, Bruce Timm not anywhere near this one. It was just Paul Dini.
I'm sure he popped up on a credit somewhere.
He may have been, like, because of Batman the Animated Series and stuff.
Yeah, I think he was an executive producer or something like that.
Yeah,
His name's definitely on the credits. I remember seeing it.
Yeah, he's not got his fingers over it in the same way that, like, when you look at Batman the Animated Series, that is his, you know. And when you now watch the new Batman show on Amazon, it's unmistakably his. You know, his style is everywhere. Whereas the style here is so far removed, as I say, that even the bat suit itself is... It's just completely different, and all of that noir stuff is gone as well, and everything's got this kind of futuristic cyberpunk kind of style to it. And again, once you settle with it, I like cyberpunk as a genre anyway, but once you settle with that style, it does fit.
I quite liked it. I mean, I was a big fan of the. I think we said it when we talked at length about it when we did the animated series, that the noir style of the animated series, I thought, was absolutely perfect. It's probably the best representation I've seen of Gotham as an entity anywhere. And I think that, again, coming into this one thinking, right, okay, well, this is certain. No, this is probably 50 years in the future from that point.
Mm.
That actually, build, you know, things have changed. Okay, we haven't got flying cars, which, you know, they've got to set up things like that. But no, the technology has changed. They, you know, they have got portable phones they take around. They have got, you know, everything's on cards. It's not cash everywhere. It's all on cards with credits on it, not credit cards, but, you know. And, you know, things like that. So you think, well, actually, yeah, they have moved it along. And they've set it in a place. Rather than saying, well, it's just, you know, Gotham 20 years later and it's kind of where we are, they've said, well, if we take everything away and completely remove it from anything anybody recognizes, we can, again, we can build Gotham as a character the same way as we did in the animated series. And I think in and of itself, it's a very important point, because if they hadn't done that, I think it would have been, if they'd kept the same aesthetic, it would be very easy to go, oh, well, yeah, it's just kind of spinning off and we don't really need to worry about it. Was, you know, it allowed it to be its own thing while still being related to the original.
It does. And it's actually, I don't think this can have been intentional at the time, but as it's aged, the Gotham of the future that we've got here feels more and more like the future Gotham that belongs to the animated series, because it's kind of, as you know, it's very difficult in the age we live in. You know, when you look at any film from the 80s that's set in like the year 2000 or in 2020 or whatever, and you're right, it's fucking flying cars and spaceports and it's all, they've shot for the moon. Whereas this does keep things slightly more realist. You know, we've got credit cards, they've got computers, they've got hard drives, they've got optical discs, you know, all these things that were just slightly, like, not even futuristic, but was all just kind of breaking technology at around about the time this was coming out.
Like, you know, like email being their preferred mode of contact, stuff like that.
Yeah, contactless credit cards and, you know, CD burners and stuff like that, which all of this stuff that was kind of bleeding edge technology then, they didn't push too far into the future with it. So now you're at the point where this has got that retro futuristic feel. This is that kind of yesterday's future that you get in a lot of, like, you know, Disney Imagineering future shows and things like that. But that fits with that Art Deco style of the animated series Gotham. You know, it fits that 50 years later, like, yeah, they wouldn't have friggin' spaceships and teleporters and stuff like that, but they might have computers and CD drives and
like, you know, like handheld phones and, like, I think everybody had, they weren't quite laptops, they were more like tablets, weren't they? They had personal communicators and stuff. So this type of stuff was coming in, and like, you had, like, you know, PDAs and stuff like that. So you did have handheld computers and things that are nowhere near as powerful as what you had here. But yeah, it's just that it's that sort of pseudo realism. You know, it's that, oh well, actually, yeah, we could not be that far away from that. It's not that incredible to think of, as you said. So no, it's not, you know, spaceships and ray guns and all the rest of it. It's just something that's a little bit further removed from where we were at the time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, credit to the writing team there for bringing it, for just folding in those throwbacks as well, but taking them a step forward. So things like the Joker gang, for instance, where it's like, look, it's not the Joker, but this is the legacy that he's left, you know, and that's, because it would have been easy, and I know they do with Return of the Joker, right? But it would have been easy right straight away from series one to just go, well, it's a Batman show, so we go have the fucking Joker, right?
Go have Joker, go have Riddler, go have Penguin, go have Catwoman.
And to just throw them in there. But they're like, no, let's evolve them. Let's bring them through. I think the one, you know, the only one they really do that with is Freeze. But even in bringing Freeze back, it's so well handled. Like, it's a really, really nice Freeze story, just as, you know, you would expect from the Freeze that you get from Batman the Animated Series, but to follow it through and to be like, well, actually, no, let's remember he's not really a bad guy. He does bad things, but at his core, like, if you were to just, you know, all of a sudden this 50 years later and he's had time to get over Nora and actually you can restore him to some semblance of humanity, then he's not necessarily going to be a criminal.
Yeah, like, I think I remember when, I can't remember if it was when we did the animated series show, or if it was, I was talking about that show with somebody else afterwards. If you were to place him in literature, he's a broken romantic.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Everything he does, it's for love. It's for the advancement of his relationship. It's to save his wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and ultimately he fails, and ultimately he becomes a monster, then can't save himself, let alone save her. There are dozens of versions of that throughout literature from the 17th century onwards, in certainly in the English language. Mm. it's not that uncommon. I think that was one thing that they did really well in the animated series, and actually they've done quite well here, where they've taken some of these very old, very tired, very worn tropes and made them into, okay, it's Batman, so it automatically takes a lot of people away from it, thinking, well, it's Batman, it's going to be fucking rubbish because it's Batman, it's not literature. But actually they've taken it and they've worked it in such a way that you could compare that character to any one of the tragic romantics of, you know, Byron and Keats and Shelley and all the rest of it, and it would, the themes would stack up.
Yeah,
it's just told in a different way because it's a different format and an entirely different society. And I think the Freeze is probably one of my favorite stories actually from the animated series.
Oh yeah, Heart of Ice is incredible.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it.
But... yeah, it's an incredible, incredible episode. And the Freeze episode here in season one is one of my favorite of that run as well. Again, just because to bring that character back, it would have been very easy to just bring him back as Mr. Freeze and like, yeah.
Yeah, he's been cryogenically frozen.
He's back and he's got his freeze gun and he's wreaking havoc on Gotham. But no, we bring him back and we cure him and we see Victor Freeze, the human, and what that would mean. And of course, then that ties into bitter old Bruce of being like, no, he's definitely going to revert to form because I know him, because I fought him, because I'm Batman. And again, it's almost that cult leader mentality of like, I am right.
I can't be wrong.
The rest of the world is wrong. I am right. Listen to me. And then again, you talk about like sort of tragic romance and stuff. And he does get pushed down that path again. It's not something he asks for. It's something that's done to him because, of course, he's being used. And so he has to revert to type and feel like he's defending himself and then go out with the ultimate sacrifice. It's again, such a beautiful, beautiful story. And this first season is full of those. Even the Monster of the Week stuff, the first season is kind of set in the world of corporate espionage, weirdly, considering it's like a high schooler. When we get to seasons two and three, there's a lot more time spent like with teenage problems. And it actually becomes, to circle back around to where I was going there before, diving into the corporate espionage, I feel like the way they handle the Monster of the Week episodes reminds me of it, like the early seasons of Buffy. Of like, here's a Monster of the Week, but it...
yeah.
It is reflective of the story that we're telling in this world. Like, you know, this monster is a personification of this element of your psyche that we're dealing with. And they do that a lot in that first season. They still do it in the second or third as well, and high school lends itself to that more easily as per Buffy, for instance. But especially in this first season where it's actually got this underpinning kind of story arc of corporate espionage and the takeover of Bruce's company and all of this, and then the evolution of Blight, and but then they set all these things in it. Like there's the episode, I forget the title, but there's the episode where the kid's getting bullied and all of a sudden he can control like a Titan robot and stuff. Yeah, Gollum. There you go. Yeah, so you've got all
and
of
just
that
because it's the future, they make it an acronym for galvanetic lifting something. I can't remember what it stood for now, but again, it's just that thing that, again, it's been done so many times in so many different, in so many sci-fi things, especially whereby there's something will have a name, they refer to it by name all the way through, and then you find out at the end it's actually the acronym of what it was supposed to stand for of what it was in the first place.
Yeah. So again, you know, typical example of the just the level of cohesion and thought that has gone into crafting this narrative and this world. You know, you've got this Monster of the Week episode where you could have. And lesser, especially kids animated shows, would have just gone, right, this week Batman's fighting a fucking robot. Why? I don't know, because they stole some plans for a robot or something, innit? Just that'll do. No worries.
Yeah.
But no, Batman's fighting the robot because somebody that goes to high school with Terry, who gets constantly bullied, is being shown up, and his dad just happens to be looking after this robot. He's involved with it. And Terry's constantly bailing this kid out of trouble, so he's got. So you've got all of this. You've got the bullied kid that needs to live up to his father's estimations and is never going to feel like he's good enough, who all of a sudden gets the power to show that he is. So you've got that. You've got, and this is very early in the run as well, but you've got Terry's savior complex come into the forefront as well straight away then. Of like he's making this worse every time he intervenes. He's actively making this worse because it's actually making the kid look weaker and weaker and weaker. So there's that gone in there as well. Then you've got Bruce stoking these fires as well, of just being like, well, you just got to destroy the fucking robot. It's just got to go. But Terry's like, No, you don't understand. I know this kid. But he's a criminal. And so you've got all of that going on as well. And then underneath all of this, we've still got our main story arc progressing, because, of course, you've still got all the technology involved and Blight behind it as well, trying to work out where this is going. So everything ties together. And this is just one episode.
Yeah.
Very early on in the run.
It's episode 4.
There you go.
So right at the start. So the first was a two-parter. So you had Rebirth was the first one. Then you had Blackout, which was the first one with Ink.
Yes.
And then you went into Golem. And then you got into the Bane episode with the drugs.
With
the Venom patches. So again, tying that back in.
Yeah, to drug abuse and everything. And straight away, Bruce is like...
And again, and high school sports as well. I mean, I know you weren't particularly sporty at school, but I mean, certainly I remember from playing rugby. By the time you get to 15, 16, I think it's the Buffy episode with the coach beats the kid, puts the kid in a coma.
Goldfish. Yeah.
It's so often used, and it's they make a joke about it in the episode about the fact that I suppose it wasn't one of the parents who did it. It's exactly the same here. You've got a coach here who's going to win at all costs, and it doesn't matter if you ruin his kids, you put them onto drugs, because we're going to win that big game. And next year, these kids will all fuck off and go and smoke crack and live in the fucking docks or whatever else, and you'll have another run of kids to have another crack at. And it's such a universal thing in school. If you're part of that sort of that sporting clique, you're fine. If you're outside of it, it's the worst fucking thing in the world, because you're less than because of all of these. And again, it talks about drugs in schools. It talks about the impermanence of high school success and peaking too early and all the rest of it. But also this whole social structure within a high school where we've got the athletes are treated like fucking gods, and actually they get their comeuppance, which doesn't always happen in real life. But again, having these experiences, and we've talked about this so many times, where high school, certainly in the Western world, is more or less a universal experience.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has some experience of high school, whether it's good, bad, indifferent, whether it's the full however many years to do in America, or the 5 years to do here, or whatever their experience is, they will have some experience of school to relate to. And same with Buffy, same with even things like Saved by the Bell, and all those early 90s teen comedies, which were set in schools and youth clubs and shit like that. They all draw on the same thing, and that's exactly what they're doing here. But they've made it slightly edgier because it's Batman and you want to tie it in. But then again, tying it to old man Bane, who can't fucking stand up, and he's in a chair, not on a ventilator, but with a fucking Venom mask on, because he can't breathe.
Mm.
It just ties it all back together, but it just brings that universality into it as well.
And again, just tracking that character through to its natural end of like, he's so juiced, his body is so fucked up from it, that he's ended up on a ventilator. But yeah, there's just so many moving parts. And I think it would be very easy for a lesser team to have just absolutely dropped them all over the floor and for this to have been a complete mess. But it has such a clear vision of what it is and where it's going. And like I say, it feels like it loses that in seasons 2 and 3 to the point where everyone involved is still giving it 100%. But the heart is gone, is what it feels like in 2 and 3. Because the heart is this kind of... It's really wrapped up in this, like this kind of cyberpunk corporate espionage, like that, you know, the whole Terry's whole origin story, you know, where his dad getting handed the CD from the guy that works at Wayne Tech, and then all of a sudden it's like his dad gets offed for it. So Terry's intrinsically caught up in this world of secrets. Yeah.
And not only that, you've got the whole aspect whereby he was grounded and he went out anyway and he got into a fight with the Jokers.
Yeah.
And then they made it look like the Jokers had broken into the house and murdered his father. So he's got all that guilt to deal with, again, bringing it straight back to Bruce and his whole thing with his parents and never get to catch the killer and all the rest of it. You have all of that wrapped up in these first couple of episodes. He says it to his mother, I should have been there. I might have been able to do something. And you've got this entire... They build this entire character where we think... Actually, he's just completely fucked himself because he did what every teenager has ever done, snuck out when he wasn't supposed to. But the consequences weren't that he got caught, he weren't that he got busted, it's that he wasn't there when somebody needed his help. And because of that, they died. And now he's got to carry that with him for the entire...
Sorry, got something in my throat.
But it's a nice way to bring it back to Batman and the Batman origin story. But at the same time, it's bringing it, you know, it's just bringing it forward for this new character. And as I said, Terry is our Cypher to begin with. Mm. So having him, you know, come into the world the same way Batman does and introduce us in that same way, it's nicely cyclical and poetic, but at the same time, it just brings new characters into it. But no, they do some really good work in that first couple of episodes where, you know, with him as the Terry character, not when he's becoming Batman.
Yeah.
You know, working on him controlling his emotions, controlling his anger. He gets into the fight with the Jokers on the subway. Not the subway, the monorail or whatever the fuck it is, very early on as well. So he's got these character flaws. We see these character flaws where he's fighting with whatever his fucking name is in the wrestling class as well. So you see he has all these issues, and all of a sudden he's gone, oh fuck, all of that stuff did me no good whatsoever because I killed my father. I effectively killed my father.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an angry
for him to carry
man.
Through. I think the only disappointment there, and I think they set it almost in motion with Paxton Powers as well. Mm-hmm. Where this whole sort of, you know, paternal relationship set up, I haven't got to the end of season three yet, and it's been a while since I've seen it, but there was more of that they could have made, potentially, and that would have been possibly preferable to the sheer volume of Monster of the Week you had in early season two.
Yeah, and that I would totally agree. That's where it goes off the boil for me slightly. As I say, it's still good. It's still better, I would say, than 90% of its peers. It's a very, very good superhero action show for kids in seasons two and three. That's what it is. Like seasons two and three are very, very good if you put them up against Thundercats, He-Man, that sort of thing. Season one is excellent in any company, and I'm not overstating that. It really is. It's a phenomenal first season of a TV show, particularly a superhero show. Like I said, I would put that up there with Gargoyles, for instance. I would put it up there with X-Men 97 that we've just recently had on Disney Plus, which is also superb and doesn't dumb itself down at all. But those back end, like seasons two, and season three is very short as well. Whereas season two was quite lengthy. There was a lot of fat in season two.
Season one was 13 episodes, and then season two was like 30 odd.
Yeah, there you go. It's almost as if a network's come in and going, we'll pick you back up, but seriously, we want a kids show because we need to sell toys.
Exactly.
You know, and it still doesn't, like, I, you know, it still doesn't dumb it down. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to make out that all of a sudden, you know, it's like, oh, gee, Willikers Batman. It's not that, but it's just, it's not the same show.
It's not the same.
It is definitely not the same show. There is a marked difference in it.
I think you're probably right what you said earlier. I think there's very much a studio influence where they're saying, look, this isn't the show we marketed. This isn't, no, it's good and all, and people like it, but it's not
the
selling
wrong
the toys.
People
it's not appealing
like
to the kids.
It is the problem.
It's
the
parents
dads
aren't letting
like
their kids
it.
Watch it.
Yeah, the dads like it. We need the kids to like it because we want them to buy the Batman toys.
We want to buy the toys and the comics and all the rest of it.
Yeah, which in reality, like, nobody's buying those toys because that suit is fucking ugly. However, again, I've spent a lot of time thinking about the Batman Beyond Bat suit. Like, too much time, if anything. it's awful, and it's boring, and it's ugly, and it's very clearly derivative of, like, Miles Morales' Spider-Man suit or the Venom Spider-Man suit. But it also does actually work for the character. Mm. Like, more so probably than Bruce's batsuit, because the whole point with Batman, right, is you need to, like, lurk around in the shadows, like I am the light. Like, this suit is just black. It's just black. Like, if you're stood in a room with the lights off, like, nobody's seeing you. It's not happening. You know,
and just for shits and giggles, they put a cloaking device on it as well.
A cloaking device on it as well, yeah, because
I don't know.
I mean, it's pretty bad at times. It is pretty bad at times how close this gets to just
completely
flat out ripping off Spider-Man. Like,
it is, and I think that there's one thing, and I would say for pretty for most DC properties and most Marvel properties is they rip the fuck out of each other all
they
the time.
They do. That's accepted.
And
right.
if anyone's turning around and saying, oh yeah, but no, they're ripping off Marvel. Marvel do it as well. We know they fucking do it. Everybody does it to each other. And it's it's people telling stories. And I've got to be honest, I don't care if it's the same story with different characters because you bring the different characterizations and things to it. It's more of what I want. It's more of what I like. So if I get that, I don't really give a fuck if it's a repeat of Batman's from 20 years ago.
Wholeheartedly agree, and as a fan of both stables, I mean, long-term listeners will know I'm a DC guy, but I don't dislike Marvel either at all. It's a fucking giant Iron Man print on the wall behind me now. You know, I've got loads of Marvel Legacy in the bookshelf behind me. It's not like I dislike them. It's not like I'm like, oh, I'll only read DC or anything like that. And I think it's important to separate the character from the power set there as well. You're right? You get very similar characters on both sides of the fence. And I feel like they rip each other off. But that's the power set. The character is normally different. The person in the suit is different. And that's what drives the story. The problem...
I think even if we look at the Who Wins we did with Justice League and the Avengers,
there are
direct comparisons for pretty much everyone. Mm. But then, as you said, that's just the superhero part of it. When you look at the characters, they're completely disparate.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not completely disparate, but they're disparate enough.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've got to be honest, aside, I see it a lot with wrestling at the moment. Is it you've either got like WWE or you've got like AEW? It's fucking wrestling. If you like it. Doesn't matter which brand it is, what ring it's in.
Doesn't matter what it says on the tin.
Enjoy it.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what it says on the tin. Absolutely. Like, a good story is a good fucking story.
Absolutely.
Right? And we're moving, increasingly toward a future where it's all going to be, everything's going to be one brand anyway.
It'll probably be Disney anyway.
Yeah. Regardless of what, any entertainment you consume is going to be Disney. And let's be honest, probably ain't going to end up being Apple, right? So, and on that day I will weep, but that's the future we're increasingly hurtling towards. So the whole ripping off aspect is what it is.
Yeah,
I think the problem for me with it is that not only is obviously web shooters aside, but not only is the suit and the power set so similar to Spider-Man, it's that Terry as a character is also so similar to Peter Parker. Yeah. And the whole origin story as well of if I'd have just been in a different place at a different time, I might have been able to stop this.
Yeah.
And with great power comes great responsibility and blah, blah, blah. And it is, it's so similar.
It's very close. Yeah.
What sets it apart is Batman. This show for me, Terry's fine as our lead man. I can get behind him. I don't dislike him at all. He'll never be Dick Grayson, but he's fine.
And they allude to that an awful lot as well.
Oh, they do. Yeah, they are well.
Very aware of what Terry's character is.
Yeah,
they're very aware that he's almost Dick Grayson, but he's not.
Yeah,
and Barbara talks about Dick Grayson. Bruce mentions the other Robins all the time. Mm. They're very much setting up that's who he is.
Yeah, and
that's fine. I'm happy. I don't mind that. I've got to be honest.
No, it's fine.
Because it knows what it is.
Yeah, and canonically, if we're following it through from Batman the Animated Series, there have been multiple Robins. We've had them all, pretty much. So that's fine. But it just for me personally, and I'm the same with all the other Robins as well. Like, I'm a Dick guy, right? So I'm gonna work this in as much as I can. So there's that part of it. But what makes the show for me, I can remove him from the show. It's about it's about old man Bruce. That's what I love about this show. I love old man Bruce, and I love that relationship he has with him, and also just the interplay he has with all the other characters as well. Still the badassery when he walks into a boardroom still and is like, no, hang on, this is actually still my company. Let's not forget who I am.
I'm still Bruce fucking Wayne, and I think that was as a character arc for him, just going from that point where he is Batman, but he can't be Batman anymore, and he has to accept that. But then he has he adopts this whole mentoring role and actually getting to the point where he is happy to all the way through he is still Batman.
Yeah,
you might be wearing my suit, I'm still Batman. Fuck off.
Yeah, totally.
It's still me. And there are a couple of times where that's very clear. It's like, no, I'm he'll outright tell Terry, I'm Batman.
Mm.
But when you get to that point where at the end of Return of the Joker, where he hands the reins over, he's like, you are Batman now. I won't interfere anymore. I've done my bit, and Gotham is safe because you are now Batman.
Yeah,
and I think there's that really nice arc for him, which I wasn't really expecting. I've got to be honest, and I don't remember the whole arc of it, and I'm sort of picking up over the last couple of days. So I've been sort of I'm getting back into it, but I think it's such an important thing because it fits with the evolution of that. I say from the animated series all the way through where he does let other people in. You do have a Robin, you have a Batgirl, but actually they move on, they have their lives, but he's still so stuck on it because that's who he is, that's his identity, and he finally realizes he can give that, he can let that go, and actually be normal because there's somebody else to take the mantle, somebody else to take the burden from him, and it took him far longer to get there than anybody expected.
Yeah, and it's actually quite an interesting kind of subversion of the guy in the chair trope as well, isn't it? Like, you've normally got the guy in the chair who's in the chair because, like, you know, he's super capable, but he's just not a frontline guy. Do you know what I mean? He's not the guy you're sending in to the field. He's your tactician or whatever, but he's out of shape or whatever. But, like, at all times, Bruce is still fucking bad. Yeah, he's like 70 something change or 80 something change. Yeah. Still fucking Batman. Like, and there are
still sharp as attack.
Like in that opening two-parter as well, like where they take down the Jokers, like he absolutely wails on them. Like he's just, you know, this is an old man and a gang of kids, and he just beats them up like they're nothing, you know.
And then like you get through going through as well. So you get the episode with Shriek, where you know he's hearing voices and he knows enough of who he is to not lose himself to it. And I think the line is there, he kept calling me Bruce.
Yeah.
That's not what I call myself.
Yeah.
You've got that. There's the episode, is it Spellbinder?
Yeah.
Where Terry's robbing the mansion.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he thinks he's playing fucking supermarket sweep. And Bruce kicks the living fuck out of him without having to beat him up. He trips him up with his cane.
Yeah.
He yanks stuff out of his hand, things like that. Because if he wasn't Batman, he wouldn't be able to do that.
No. But it is the most, just, again, the evolution of that character. And we've talked about it on Who Wins multiple times. And I feel like I talk about this a lot when people throw the Batman prep time argument up. And it's like, no, you don't understand. It isn't even about the prep time. It's about the fact that this motherfucker is so good at what he is the best at what he does, because he has studied every possible form of martial art. He knows warfare in and out. Like, he knows the move you're going to make in 2 minutes' time, not the move you're going to do now. So, yeah, he can be 80 years old and brandishing a cane, and he will still take you off your feet because he knows where you're going to shift your center of gravity before you do it. Because he doesn't have to be quick. It's the Darth Vader thing that we talked about on Who Wins a couple of weeks ago as well, where it's like, he wanders around and just uses brute force because he doesn't need to be quick. He doesn't need to rush. He's just that fucking good. And it's the same thing with Old Man Bruce. It's just like, no, I'll still take out somebody half my age because they're stupid and rash, and I'm not.
Yeah, right? And they underestimate the old man.
Of course they do.
The thing as well. And I think that There's a whole thing in here as well. If you look at Bruce and Bruce's arc, is that he doesn't get beaten; he beats himself. No pun intended. That it's his body lets him down.
Mm.
He can't. He's not Batman anymore because his body can't do it.
Yeah.
It's not because he doesn't want to be. It's not because he's not got it up here. It's because his heart can't take it.
Yeah.
And as a general side effect of getting old,
mm.
because all the people who want to kill him, all the people who've been sent to put him in the ground over the years, have failed. Yeah. And actually, he will die of old age.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where the heart of it is for me. And I think, again, that's probably why seasons 2 and 3, I kind of bounce off a little bit, just because it does shift slightly further out of Bruce's world and into into Terry's world. And like I say, I still enjoy it. And I still think it's easily one of the best superhero cartoons out there. It's just not one of the best shows out there. Like I genuinely think this first season is incredible. And it, you know, on rewatches now, I probably will this time go through 2 and 3 again, just because, like you, I've bought them, so I'll watch them. But then I think, you know, subsequent rewatches, I'll probably just stop at season one is the thing, because that's enough, because it tells such a good story and it tells it so well.
Yeah, like I'm thinking now, I mean, I'm at a point where number two is 10 and I'm thinking I could quite happily,
he'll sit down
and watch it. I would quite happily sit down and stick the animated series on and say, right, let's watch a couple of these and work way through it and then get to the end of that and go, right, okay, this is what came next.
Yeah.
And then lead him into that. And no, maybe not. I mean, I've watched a season in like 7 hours or something. I sat down and did it yesterday evening. So wouldn't do that with him, but sort of pick up a couple, one or two a day for a couple of weeks just to get it and get him into it and get him interested in it. Because I think as the way it's all put together, the way it's presented, I think that from the start of the animated series right the way through to the end of this, I think there's a lot gone into this. There's a lot of story in here. And I think there's a lot that he will take out of it that he won't pick up on a lot of the stuff that we picked up on, the things we've been talking about tonight. He'll be looking at it from It's a Batman Show.
But it works like that as well. And that's fine.
Yeah, and all the way through, it'll flow like that. But then hopefully introduce him to it. If I introduce him to it now where he says he's 10, give him a couple of years and he might rewatch it and say, oh, hang on,
there's something going on here. Yeah,
what about that? What's going on by there? Because I know this is what's happening in the story.
Yeah.
But where are we?
Yeah, it's...
I think there's a lot there.
It's a good one because it's an animated show and it's a kids, or targeted at kids anyway.
Yeah.
It is quite a good one, I think, to sit someone down and kind of open their eyes to, you know, to subtext and to contextual analysis, because like you can miss it all. If you just want to watch Terry beating up villain of the week, fine, that's there. But there is so much going on under the surface. And, you know, as a viewer, whether you know it or not, as a consumer of media, your brain is making these connections. That's how storytelling works. The writer has put it all there for you. Now, you might not notice it as blatantly as, say, Mark or I do, because we're going looking for it.
Yeah.
But it's there, and you are reacting to it. And I think as a kid, you're not. But then, to sit him down again in maybe 5 years' time and go, right, now watch it again. And I think, There's something that can be gained from that. But you just reminded me, you said you watched everything in about 7 hours and change. You know, all of this stuff that we're saying is packed into this first season, 13 episodes of 20 minutes each. Like, the economy of storytelling is
completely
madness. Yeah. Like, there is absolutely nothing in these episodes that does not serve a purpose and doesn't need to be there. Like, they are... In fact, I think they're slightly under 20 minutes. I think they're 19 something.
I think they're 19 and change, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think.
And then credits. So the economy.
Yeah, because the opening credits are a minute. The closing credits are about 35 seconds. And I think it runs to 22 minutes.
There you go. So in terms of your actual on-screen story time, you know, the amount that's gone into it. We haven't talked about the theme at all. We should, because I think it's really fucking good.
Fits really well.
It that's the thing. It's the right theme for this show, right?
I mean, it's not anything I'd go looking for. I mean, back at this point, we're fucking buying ringtones and shit. I certainly wouldn't have gone and done that because it's not my type of shtick. But it fits the product very well.
It does. It definitely does. It's got that kind of slightly thrashy, kind of almost new metalish sound behind it.
Tell you what it reminded me of at the very start of it, though, the very opening chords of it. Do you remember the anti-piracy ad you used to get on rented videos?
Yes!
You wouldn't steal a car.
Yes!
It's those opening chords are there.
Yes.
And the first couple of times, I put it on, I had it on last night, and I was on my phone when it started, and that came on, and I thought, fuck, they've put an advert on the actual recording I've bought, which is unheard of. And I was convinced they'd actually put the ad on the fucking the digital download as well.
It does, though. So, but
and then obviously it launches into it and it sort of goes on a bit long and you don't get the dodgy person nicking a handbag or nicking a video or whatever else. But yeah, it reminded me of that straight away. But I think it's an apt theme to it. I think it sets, even at times if it doesn't fit what the episode is going to become, it sort of sets the pace quite well. And you know you're going into it quite quick. You're going to be into that week's plot quite quickly.
Yeah, and I think it's just like we are so accustomed now to what a superhero theme should be, right? And what a superhero theme tune should sound like and what should be in the front of the show. And it should be sweeping and orchestral and grand.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but no, this is like cyberpunk and tech noir. So this is not going to sound like that. And it shouldn't sound like that.
Yeah. If they tried to bastardize or update the animated series, for example, if they tried to bastardize that and make it fit here, it would have completely ruined it.
Totally. And again, it's about that clarity of vision, I think, from all of the creative team. Like, everything is singing in harmony, from the character designs to the suit design, which I don't like but totally understand, to the retro futuristic world that they're in, to that theme. It, like, all of it, it just feels like there has been absolute clarity of vision from day one of going, like, yeah, it's called Batman Beyond or Batman of the Future, but that's not all it is. Like, this is our world, you know? Yeah. And they, it, like, not to be glib, but they didn't have to do any of that, because let's be honest, it's got Batman in the title.
Yeah. You could make a Batman show. You could make an update of Batman 66.
Yeah,
and people will still watch it
because it's Batman.
The one thing I really did rub up against, actually, from their sort of their futuristic point of view, the fucking font.
Really
pisses me off. It's like, what can we? We just get something. We'll blow it up. We'll get a random font. We'll blow it up so it looks a bit pixelated and a bit futury, and that'll do. And I think for all the effort that went in everywhere else, they could have spent 5 minutes on a fucking better fucking font.
But you see, that's like my issue with the suit. It's like the font makes sense because it looks digitized, and the core of the story is all about that data that's been stolen.
But it's fucking wrong.
But it's wrong, isn't it? I'm the same with the suit. Like, the suit makes perfect sense. It's the evolution of the bat suit, so it's jet black, and it's got a cloaking device, and, you know, it's got muscle amplification and all of that stuff in it. And I get it.
The little wings rather than the sweeping cape and all the rest.
Yeah, and I get it. I get how that,
it's just not Batman,
enables you to move faster and stuff, and you're more like, but come on, I want a big ass cowl and a cape swooping out.
Yeah.
And bit of colour as well, like, it's just different aspects of the character, isn't it? Because there's that aspect of lurking in the shadows and being like the kind of silent assassin. But then, I don't know, I've always really liked the aspect of Batman of, like, I'm hidden until I want you to see me, and when you see me,
that's it.
You are going to shit your pants.
Yeah, by the time you see me, it's too fucking late.
Yeah, and it's also just like that silhouette of just the cape billowing out, and it's just like it's terrifying.
Yeah,
I don't think anybody's terrified of fucking Terry McGinnis in his goofy black outfit with the white eyes.
No, like, and the fucking ears are too long as well. The pointy ears are too long.
Yeah, I'm a fan of stubby ears on the cowl. Again, it's that Dark Knight Returns look. I'm a fan of kind of stubby opportunities. I think there's a place for them. There's a place for elongated ears, but they need to come again with the cape, because then you get the real like gothic look. Whereas here, it just all looks a little bit stretched. Like the whole design is very lithe and stretched, and again, very Spider-Man. That's the thing.
Yeah. It's quite funny though, because the character design, it's really inconsistent. You've got your core cast. So you've got Terry, you've got Dana, you've got Max. They're all very lithe, very slim limbed, very bendy, very sort of, they look very quick and very nimble. Then Bruce is a brick shit house because he's Bruce fucking Wayne.
Mm.
But then when you get to like the Jokers, even the ones who are young and muscly and all that, none of them are designed the same way that Terry and Dana and Max are. They're all a lot bulkier and a lot more rounded, and they move in a lot more lumbering sort of way. And it's almost as if they've gone, well, we don't want to make our main characters too similar to everywhere else. And they've kind of, as I said, it does look like they're a bit stretched at times.
Yeah,
especially when Terry's Batman. Actually, when Terry's Terry. He looks a bit more fitting because he's normally got a jacket on, and he's a bit
strange,
bulkier,
isn't it? He's broader.
It's really weird.
Terry is
the
broader
body
than Batman.
Fit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's really broad across the shoulders. When you see him as Terry, he's quite barrel-chested because he's like the wrestler and stuff
But the shape of the face is wrong as well, because like when he's in the bat suit, his jaw is quite pointed.
Yes.
Whereas when you see him, his jaw is a little bit squarer. So it's almost as if they haven't equated Terry with being Batman in the bat suit.
I totally agree. The bat suit here kind of feels like almost a sort of a morph suit, if you like a sort of all-in-one Lycra kind of, again, like a Spider-Man kind of suit, which is fine and it has its place, but it just doesn't seem to fit with Batman, where, to me, I want bulk and I want it to be angular and I want it to be imposing and I want to see the fucking musculature in the suit.
Yes, he looks like a kid playing dress up. It looks like he's by the kids' costumes. Like when you buy him now, they're all fucking muscle suits, aren't they? So they're all padded and all the rest of it. They look like them. But
it looks like the kind of kids' costume we would have bought, like the onesie type of fear.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, where your Incredible Hulk is just a pair of green pajamas with some purple shorts.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's that type of effect. That's what it looks like here. It's a kid playing dress up rather than being a superhero.
Yeah, and what's really strange about that, right, is because I think there's a way you get to that suit via Terry sort of making his own, as opposed to Bruce giving him, like, this is the evolution of my bat suit.
It's a bit, again, it's very Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's this whole thing of, I'll have the really shitty one that I put together myself and I look like I'm a fucking tramp. And then it will evolve into something fit for purpose.
Yes.
Once I know what the fuck I'm doing, or the billionaire gives me one that costs fucking more than I would ever make in my lifetime.
Yeah.
It's that, no, it's that thing. But it's almost as if, with every superhero origin story, yes, okay, you have the origin of where the characters come from and what the skill set is, but there's always an element of they have to fail before they can succeed. They need to learn what the limitations are to then work on them to perfect themselves.
Mm.
And you look, I know you're not a fan, but you look at Nolan's Batman Begins. The essence of that story is that Bruce Wayne's he's a rich twat who doesn't know his arse from his elbow, and he becomes Batman by learning, and he fails constantly in order to make himself better.
Yeah.
And you don't get that with Terry, and I think just possibly one thing you do need a bit more of.
Definitely.
Is, yes, you have the emotional side of it where he has to he has to deal with grief and all the rest of it, but also he needs to go from being average fucking Joe to being Batman.
To being Batman, agreed.
And he doesn't start off in that 0 point.
I really like Batman Begins as it goes. It's the other two that I fucking detest.
I'd agree with that as well.
I really like Batman Begins. I think it's excellent. They just lost the plot after that, in my view. And that's a hill I will die on. So if you want to argue with me about The Dark Knight, listeners, come on, here I am.
I'd agree with that, actually. I think that the biggest problem I have with The Dark Knight is that Oscar belonged to fucking Aaron Eckhart. And if Heath Ledger hadn't died, he wouldn't be anywhere fucking near it.
100% agree. 100% agree. Let's not get into my thoughts on Ledger's Joker. It's well documented on this network. And if you've ever spent more than 30 seconds with me. but also, like, it's a Batman film, right? Now, Batman is very consciously not in the title of that film, in my view.
Yeah.
Because it's a Batman film that Batman's barely fucking in. Like,
it's not his film.
No, it's not.
It's like a Two-Faces film.
Yeah, and he's brilliant in it.
A dense film.
He's absolutely brilliant in it. And it is actually, I'm being glib, it's a very, very good film. I do actually enjoy that film. I have problems with it. It's a very, very good thriller. It's not a Batman film. It's not a superhero film.
Yeah.
So I dislike it for those reasons. The third one is a fucking abomination. Don't even get me started. We are going to go too far off topic. And we should be winding up, let alone me launching into the fucking... I can do a fucking Game of Moans level rant for 3 hours about The Dark Knight Rises, believe me. Hate it. Where were we before you took me off on that tangent? Suits.
Suits is of the evolution of a character, where your starting point, and
and it's not, you're right, that's not there, because we kind of come in from the point of, but again, there's this kind of, Terry's our main character, but it's, and it is Terry's story, I guess, but it's equally about Bruce is the thing. So we're already coming in with Bruce being Batman.
I was going to say, I think for me, it's Terry's our cipher, but it's the story is the evolution of Batman.
Yes,
as his own character.
Yes,
not Terry, not Bruce. It's where Batman starts and where Batman ends.
Yes, agreed. I think yeah, that's what I was trying to say. You've managed to put that a lot more eloquently than I would. Yes,
fuck that doesn't happen often.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's the character is Batman, and it's about the transition of power from one to the other. It's not about Terry becoming the new Batman. It's about him just taking over that mantle, isn't it? So and they make, like I say, they make that conscious decision right at the start. Like, there's no explanation of who Batman is, and there doesn't need to be. It's like it's just assumed that you know. And really, at this point in history, we should be able to do that with all of these fucking characters.
Oh god, yeah.
Like, if you don't know who Batman is, or who Superman is, or who Captain America is, or who Spider-Man is, just like, what are you doing watching the film in the first place? Like,
well, yeah, and no, there's an entire library of comic books.
Yeah,
and
I mean, look, you can find it out TV off shows Google and all sorts in 10 of seconds flat if you need to. Like, we shouldn't need to keep telling origin stories now.
Mm. Yeah.
It doesn't need to happen unless they've got something interesting to add or some new ground to break or something extra to add to the character.
Yeah.
We just don't
think
need
that. I mean, if you look
stories.
At you look at Joker, is it Todd Phillips who did that?
Mm-hmm. Todd Phillips.
You look at that and a massive diversion in terms of the character of the Joker and where it's come from and all the rest of it. But it's an origin story for a different Joker.
Exactly. So you need that.
You need that. And if they are going to leverage that into something else, then fine. And if they're not, and it's going to stand on its own, then that's fine too. Mm. It's from my perspective, I thought it was a very good character piece. Didn't necessarily need to be Joker. I think selling it as Joker just kind of grounds it in a world and puts asses on chairs. Let's be fair. That could have been Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
It could have been. I think it ends up being the best on-screen portrayal of the Joker we've ever had in live action.
I
think the title is perfectly apt. I think by the end of that film, like, I think that is the closest anyone's ever come to putting the Joker on screen. And that's another hill I'll fucking die on. or my Joker, anyway, I should say. Mm. Who knows what's going to happen with this fucking sequel? Because it sounds like,
I don't know. I'm not convinced. But yeah, I think it's one of those that it's interesting. Now you're seeing a lot, and you see it with because a lot of Creative Commons, and there's a lot of public domain stuff coming about now. Stuff that's out of license. So you had it with the Winnie the Pooh film last year, the Blood and Honey thing.
Yeah,
these characters are now coming to the public domain, so people are able to say, well, actually, there's a story I'd quite like to tell with these characters, and now I can.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to fit. I don't have to write the fucking another Batman story to have the Joker. And I don't have to get the fucking rights and the clearances to do it, because this character is now public domain. I can do that, and I can tell the story I want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And if at some point it transitions, it doesn't really fit that character, it doesn't really fit where that sits anymore, that's fine, because nobody's coming at me saying, well, that's not the Joker, that's not Batman, because I'm telling my own version of it. Mm. So yeah, I think it's... That was an interesting film. I'm going to go on a massive, massive tangent again because of what we do, but I think that was a very good character piece, and it would have worked equally well if they just said, right, this is a person descending into madness, a la Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, a la Falling Down, which is another favourite of mine. But they didn't. They hung it on a platform, and that automatically got eyes on it because people are looking and thinking, right, what version of the Joker is this? And now we're very much attuned to Infinite Earths and multiverses and all the other bollocks they want to put into it. So you can see, actually, well, it's not taking away from Nicholson's Joker or Ledger's Joker or Mark Hamill's Joker.
It's just a different one.
It's just a different plan, a different version or a different evolution of that character, and that's fine. And people are accepting that now.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I like about this Batman is that in Batman Beyond, bringing back to that, is that they're not trying to make it Adam West. They're not trying to make it Michael Keaton or Val. They're just going, this is where we are with it,
yeah,
and we're just running with it. And as I said, if you don't know where Batman came from, fucking look it up.
Yeah, and
that's all you have to do.
Ultimately, it doesn't matter, does it? What matters is there's a guy in a suit fighting crime, and that you know, you can find the rest of it out organically. Like we don't need to know the whole dead period. It helps of course it helps. It gives you an emotional tie.
And if you don't know, it's brought in. So Terry says to Bruce, your parents died, my parents died. Oh, my dad died.
Let's be besties. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's that sort of thing. Why did you say Martha? It's that type of thing. It's just a really tenuous fucking link. It goes, actually, yeah, I don't need to know any more than that. Dead parents, dead father. Done. Move on.
Yeah. And let's be fair. Like, even if you don't know these characters, if you're coming into any sort of superhero film without the prerequisite knowledge of dead parents, like, you've been living under a rock.
Where have you been?
Yeah. Like, it's so intrinsically linked to the material of, like, if it's a superhero story, fuck, let's be honest, if it's an action hero story these days,
yeah,
like, in terms something of inciting died.
Your
incidents,
parents, your dog.
Yeah. You're inciting incident, someone's dead. Off you go. Like, that's what shatters your equilibrium. Like, it's the oldest trope in the book because it works, because it's unshakable, it's unchallengeable, you know, because... Yeah. There's this great equalizer amongst all of us where, you know, where somebody goes this close to us, like, everybody deals with it different, and you cannot and should not ever cast any sort of judgment on how anyone deals with grief.
That's what I was going to say, is that everybody's grief is different.
Yeah.
And some people break down, some people, you have your stages of grief. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
It's that, you know, some people stay in anger for a long time, some people live in denial. But ultimately, there's a process you go through. But you cannot tell me that, oh, somebody who's grieving wouldn't do that. How the fuck do you know?
Yeah.
I know people who've lost parents who've gone on a 4-day bender and shagged anything that moved.
Yep.
Because they wanted a connection with something, because that's how they went.
Yeah.
Other people have shut themselves off and gone, I don't want to see anybody. Other people have just sort of business as usual. Mm-hmm. That's what people are always different. And that's the thing with it. As much as I fucking hate people are assholes, but everyone is different and everyone responds in a different way. And you cannot take that away by saying, well, that wouldn't happen. You don't know.
You can't possibly say.
No.
So it's a trope that works. If Terry decides he wants to put on a jet black suit with a pair of pointy ears and beat up bad guys, fine. Done.
Similarly, if he's putting on pink heels and a bra and going to a club, fine. That's what if he needs to do that, absolutely get on with it.
So
be a less interesting show.
Yeah, totally. But, well, I don't know.
Yeah, different.
But you would easily bring that to the material, did you not know it already? It's superhero, right? What's his reason for superheroing? Someone's dead. Like, that's just it. That's how it works. Like,
yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's Thomas and Martha Wayne, doesn't matter if it's Pa Kent, doesn't matter if it's Uncle Ben, like, whoever it is, someone's dead.
Somebody's dead.
Doesn't matter if it's Aunt May, whoever it is, someone's fucking dead. That's it. That's how it starts.
Yeah, superhero 101.
Yeah. So, you don't need origin stories. That was a major tangent that we went on. Look, in closing, circling back around, I could talk about this show all night. There is so much in it. I think I've been as even-handed as I can possibly be. Like I said, there is stuff I don't like. But even the stuff I don't like is not... It's not so bad that I'm like, oh, fuck this show. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, well, it was better. The first season was better than the other two. It's kind of gone off the boil a little bit, but it's still very, very good. Again, quite similar to Gargoyles, really. You know, the second season of Gargoyles is nowhere near as good as the first, but it's still better than most other things. And this is the same. You know, it's been... I didn't need to rewatch this. I think I said to you when it was coming up on the slate, I was like, oh, it'd be fine. I don't need to rewatch that. But I wanted to. And it's the first show we've had in a while where I've had that level of commitment to it. And I think that speaks to its quality as much as anything else.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, I was the other way. So I haven't. It's been a long time since I've watched it, so I needed to rewatch it. And I think that I was quite content to say, well, I've picked up that recap on YouTube, the 40 Women's Show. I'll put the link in the show, because if anybody's not familiar with it, no, it's a good starting point. But having watched that, I'm thinking, actually, yeah, I remember really liking this, especially the first season, especially all the stuff with Blight. Mm. And I thought, actually, yeah, I think I'm going to pick this up and go through it. And okay, no, we've got more stuff to watch. I've got other work to do. I've got my day job to do. But at the same time, I've only got, probably over 30 episodes left. That's not, that's doable in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I can do that quite comfortably.
Yeah.
And I think I'll get a lot out of that. I know it's, a lot of the time we watch the show, yeah, I'd like to watch more of it if I can fit it in before we move on to the next thing. I'm very much intent on watching the rest of this. And even if it's not in the next couple of weeks, certainly by the end of the year, I'll be thinking, right, I want to get through this again because I've really fucking enjoyed it. And the last day and a half have been a really good time. And fortunately, somebody, the guy I share an office with is on leave this week. So I sort of quietly took my iPad in today, stick it in front of the monitor behind the keyboard, and it was on while I was working. So I was able to pick up more episodes than doing it that way as well. And it's been a long time since I've come off one of these going, I absolutely have to watch the rest of this.
Yeah.
And the only frustration was that Return of the Joker sold separately and it's another £9 fucking quid.
Yeah. It intermittently pops up for free. It's one of those that it's free, then it's not, then it's free, then it's not, then it's free, then it's not. So you've just got to catch it when it's free. Because it's really expensive, to be fair, I've got...
It's like £8 or £9 quid. I was on iTunes. I was looking for it on Amazon. I couldn't find it on Amazon yesterday. And I was on iTunes. I don't know why it wouldn't pop up. It popped up this morning when I was looking for it. But when I was on iTunes, and the series was like $24.99, and then that was $7.99 or $8.99. I'm thinking, I don't really want to spend that on top of the series to then not get to watch it before we do the show anyway and probably come back to it later on.
I mean, you'll probably pick...
I mean, I will at some point, yeah, but it just wasn't necessary for today.
If you're willing to deal with physical media, you'll probably pick it up on eBay for like $2.99 or something.
Yeah, that's true. So I'm gonna find a fucking DVD player to go with it.
Well, that's the thing. You've got to hook a DVD player up, haven't you? You got PlayStation. You can put it in PlayStation.
This is true.
That'll work.
Yeah, that'll work.
So yeah,
I still have to hook that up because the PS4's got one. The PS5.
Oh shit! Yeah, you got a discless. Anyway. I keep forgetting. You got a digital PS5 thing, and you? Yes.
Yeah, I've got a PS4 here somewhere. I can put it into that.
Yeah. So you can pick it up cheaply that way.
Yeah, okay. That's true.
But. Yeah, in case you can't tell, listeners, I think we both unanimously have had a great time with this. I 100% absolutely recommend it to everybody, whether you've seen it before or definitely not. Like, if it's one that you've got nostalgia with, it's probably even better than you remember it. It is,
yeah.
As I'm testament to. If you've never watched it, you definitely should. You are missing out. It is a fantastic show.
I had a similar conversation with somebody about a very popular show a couple of years ago, which I hadn't seen. I was entirely tardy to the party. I have it. I bought it. Just never got around to fucking watching it. And I was saying that I'd never seen it. I was about to start it. And the comment they made was, I wish I could be in that position where I'm seeing it for the first time.
I said that to Luke, friend of ours, my godson, not so long ago, because he's just started watching Buffy, and I'm like, I'm so jealous.
I'd love to have that first time experience again.
I'm so jealous of people watching it for the first time, and this is one of those. You're right, this is one of those with somebody watching it for the first time. You're like, well, unless you have a first time like I did, so.
But yeah,
but then maybe I'm even more jealous of them then if they can watch it for the first time now as a kind of adult and actually appreciate it rather than being a stupid teenager like I was and go like, this ain't fucking Batman. Fuck this. Where's Nightwing? Because I was an idiot back then. So, you know. Yeah.
But I think however you get to it, no, it doesn't really matter. Doesn't it? The fact that you've then been able to go back to it and have that experience. And I think that the only thing that would have been possibly better for me to see would be if you'd come into it having not rewatched it at any point and then watched it for this expecting to hate it.
Oh, that would have been interesting, definitely.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
To see where you've come at it from.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I agree. I think we both had a great time with this, and I think that if you haven't seen it, go and fucking pick. You know, it's not expensive to pick up the run. You can pick up individual series for less than I paid for the whole run. Obviously, there are snippets of it online to where you can pick up clips. So I'll post the link to the recap, which is really useful as well. So I mean. Yeah, just go out and check it out because it's a far more wonderful thing than I remembered. Even when you do have the dip in quality to the second season, the change in tone, I should say. The quality is the same. It's the tone changes.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, it's not
yeah,
that
the
it's...
The quality remains, it's the tone changes.
Yes.
It's every bit as good in its writing and stuff.
It's just it feels like it's been put into a different box. And
yes.
I don't like that box as much. That's the thing.
Yeah, I think, and it's because that box doesn't fit the first season. Yeah, but that's by the by. I think it's a great show. It's a great watch. As always, I'd love to know what people think. I know there's a lot of love for this. There was a lot of not love for it in the uh, in the first place when it first came out, a lot of people had the same response to you: "That's not fucking Batman. What's this shit about?" And it's got it won people over. It's got it went on to get achieve sort of cult status, and now it's very much accepted as it's just the evolution of Batman. From the animated series. And people are coming to love it. So I'd love to know what people's early experiences were and what their current experience is as well. So get in touch, as always, on Twitter at SMPDpod. Go to our website, ddpodcast.net. We can also get other episodes and our other shows as well. Where you get your podcasts from, subscribe, leave a message, we'll get back to you as best we can. Until next time.
See you later. We'll be right back.